Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Tom Elias. And many of you may recognize the name. We've had Tom on many times in the past talking about a book he wrote about the Brzezinski breakthrough and about Dr. Brzezinski's treatment for cancer and all the efforts that have been made, of course, to block that dissemination of that treatment. And now at least it is available people can go to Dr. Brzezinski's clinic there in Houston and get the treatment. But tonight we're going to just change certainly our approach. We're going to be talking this time about the elections here in California. Now, for those people listening to our program out across America, you say, well, why should I be worried about the elections in California? And I'll tell you why you should be worried about the elections in California. Because California is the eighth largest economy in the world. If we were an independent country, we would be the eighth largest nation, at least as far as economic growth and influence in the entire world. And what happens in California is going to have a profound impact upon what happens throughout the rest of this country. And we have a number of elections, races going on. Of course, the elections are going to be, I think, a week from Tuesday, a week from yesterday. And certainly the governor race is a fascinating race. We have Meg Whitman. Of course, she was in charge of eBay, and she's very liberal. And then we have a fellow named Steve Posner, and they're the two major candidates. Now, we have a lot of other candidates as well, and some of them are very good conservatives. But we're not even hearing about them. All we're hearing about is this race between the two candidates. And certainly Tom writes a syndicated column right across California and across the country. He knows certainly the candidates. He knows their background. And I asked him to come on this evening and give his impression of what's going on and what the impact is going to be of whichever candidate gets elected, because I think it's either going to be Posner or Whitman when the Republican nomination and then go into the November election against Jerry Brown, who's a Democrat, an old-line Democrat. His dad was Pat Brown. He was the governor of California for many years, did a good job. And then, of course, Jerry was the governor here in California. And, well, I hate to say it, but he did a pretty good job. But now, of course, we have many years gone by, and 30 years or more, and certainly Jerry is going to be the Democrat nominee. And either Whitman or Posner is going to be the Republican nominee. But why anybody would want to become the governor of California is like, you know, spending a lot of money to become the captain of the Titanic after it has already struck the iceberg. But you go right ahead, Tom. I want your take on what's really going on, what the race is, and what's going to happen to California.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you again, Stan, as always. And there's a couple of things, a couple of elements to what you've just said that I might want to expand upon a little bit. Why is this important to the rest of the country, first of all? First, because what happens in California almost invariably happens everywhere else in America later. And we're seeing this in the area of the state budget, for instance, where across America, California in the last couple, 3 years has become a sort of a laughingstock because of all the budget deficits it's running. Well, guess what? So are a lot of other states. We hear a lot in California about how Texas is an exemplary state these days. It supposedly is drawing a lot of jobs away from California, and it's easier to do business there and so on. Doesn't have an income tax. Guess what? The state of Texas now has a larger budget deficit than California.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Tom Elias.
Okay.
Tom, you go right ahead.
Okay. Well, the state of Texas has a larger budget deficit now than California. It amounts to between $19 and $20 billion for the next fiscal year. And the state of Texas doesn't even have an income tax. So it's a little difficult to see how they can solve it in a day when oil is priced much lower than it has been and when consumption of oil in this country is dropping. And that means that their oil severance taxes, which are the basis of their state budget in Texas, of their revenues, are not coming in to the extent that they need them to. That's why they have the big budget deficit there. And the budget deficit, if you look at it in a per capita basis or in a proportional basis, is about double California's, because the Texas budget is about half the size of California's, and yet they're running the same deficit approximately as California's. And you go on across the country. Proportionately, New York has a bigger budget deficit than California. Illinois has a bigger budget deficit. Nevada, Arizona, almost everywhere you look, there are 23 states right now with larger, proportionately speaking, on a per capita basis, budget deficits than California. But California was first, and because Arnold Schwarzenegger is involved, California gets the most publicity. And that's one of the absurdities of American life, is how it's so much driven by celebrities. If we didn't have a celebrity governor in California, then people might be saying more about these other states and their budget problems. But they're not. So what happened first in California on the budget is now happening across the country, just like it does in almost every other field. So how we handle the budget problem here in California, how we resolve it, is going to have an influence on all these other states across the country. Now you ask, why is a state budget deficit different than a federal budget deficit? We don't worry as much about federal budget deficits. Well, the big difference is that when the federal government runs out of money, it can print more. States can't do that. States don't print their own money. And Europe is discovering that now. That's why Greece is in so much trouble now, and Spain and Portugal are coming on to have problems almost as big as Greece's, and Italy is right behind them, and France behind them. They went to the euro. So all these countries can't print their own money anymore. And so their options are for getting out of budget problems and for digging out of deficits are just not what they were. They're about the same kind of options that a state like California does. And oddly enough, countries like France and Italy...
Hold that thought, Tom. We'll be right back here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Tom was simply pointing out that there are a lot of states, about well over 20 states, all across this country that are having budget problems, and certainly many of them have proportionally a larger budget deficit than we do here in California, where the budget deficit is $20 to $21 billion, at least that's acknowledged. But, of course, the interesting thing is that California will probably lead the way as to what you do with these massive budget deficits. How do you deal with them? Well, of course, the federal government doesn't have that problem. They just print more money. And right now, of course, last year, while the state of California, we borrowed $6 billion from the federal government so we could, suddenly make some of our payments. What are we going to do this year? Are we going to borrow again? And we still got that $6 billion we borrowed last year. But let's get Tom's thoughts on, first of all, what we're going to do with the budget deficits, or what about these candidates that are running? Each one is accusing the other of being a liberal, and the truth of the matter is they're both liberals. I mean, the two Republicans are liberal, the Democrats liberal. Boy, California is in real trouble, but you go right ahead.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, I'm not quite sure that too many other people would call the two leading Republicans out here liberal. Nobody would argue that they're both billionaires. By the way, the current leader in the polls, Meg Whitman, used to be, as you said before, the chairwoman of eBay. Prior to that, she ran the Teleflora Florist Service. She was in charge of marketing Mr. Potato Head for Hasbro Toys. That's kind of a little bit of her background, but basically on the strength of stock options and sweetheart deals with brokerage houses like Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs and also J.P. Morgan, she made a lot of money in private deals that they offered to her in return for bringing the banking business of eBay to her. In the real world, we would call that a kickback. In the world of high finance and billionaires, it's called personal banking. But some of the practices that Meg Whitman engaged in with Goldman Sachs in particular are now illegal. They weren't illegal at the time, but they are today, part of the financial reforms that followed the near collapse of the banking system. Mr. Poizner, on the other hand, Steve Poizner, who's the current insurance commissioner of California, is a man who built his own businesses. He built a business that designed the GPS chip that's in almost all cell phones. He sold that company for more than $1 billion. And then he went into politics, basically. Now, if you want to call these people liberal, I would say that's a bit of a stretch.
Well, let's put it this way. They're liberal on, certainly, apparently, if we're to believe the ads, why, Steve Poizner backed to Gore, and Al Gore's attempt to be president, and certainly, Meg Whitman has backed very liberal candidates, Democratic candidates for office. So that's true.
Whitman did, in fact, donate money to Barbara Boxer, the very liberal Democratic senator from California, who's also on the ballot here this year. And she's explained it in a very interesting way. She said she backed Boxer because Boxer opposed an internet sales tax, and that was very important to eBay at the time. So if you take that in context, two things to think about that. Yes, Boxer did oppose the internet sales tax that was proposed back in the early 2000s, and that's correct. But her opponent in 2004, the last time she ran for re-election, Bill Jones, the former Republican Secretary of State of California, Bill also opposed the internet sales tax. And yet, Whitman contributed... Whitman and her affiliated individuals contributed over $200,000 to the Boxer campaign that year. But she said she did it for money. It was not ideology. It was only about money.
Well, I'm sure glad that she's a woman of principle.
That's right. Now you know what moves Meg Whitman.
Right.
But why? Boxer, on the other hand, was backing Al Gore, and he's never really given a reason for it.
I don't think Meg's explanation of backing Barbara Boxer is simply because she opposed the internet tax. Right now she's trying to cover her tracks because, of course, of Poizner's trying to paint her as a liberal, and she's trying to paint Poizner as a liberal.
It's really rather comical how they're both trying to pander to the right wing of the Republican Party. And they do that because in California, the right wing of the Republican Party essentially decides who wins the primaries. This may change in the future because we're about to go, if one of the propositions on the ballot at the same time next week, if it passes, it's called Proposition 14, if this measure passes, we're going to have an open primary system where everybody will be able to vote for anybody in any party in a primary election, and the top two vote getters in the primary will go through to the runoff election. But that system isn't enforced this year. It will be next time if it passes.
If it passes, go ahead.
Yeah. That's a system, by the way, that exists in two states right now, Washington and Louisiana. And it hasn't been tried in California, although we had something a little bit like it back in the late 90s, but it's getting a little esoteric to go into that, a little bit inside baseball, I think. But you say these candidates are liberal because of who they backed in the past. And Poizner, I should point out, claims that he did not actually back Gore, but that it was his wife who contributed.
Oh, his wife gave the money. Well, that really makes me feel ever so much better.
Oh, well, I'm just telling you what the candidate said.
I don't. I'm a little tongue-in-cheek. Go right ahead.
I understand that. Both of these people, you understand, if you, especially if you watch their TV commercials, and there is a record number of TV commercials between them by the time this campaign is over, in the primary, these two candidates will have spent $120 million, most of it on TV advertising.
Well, of course, the point about Poizner is they keep saying, here's a man who tried to do away with Proposition 13. Here's a man who wanted to raise taxes.
Well, that's not quite true.
Well, it may not, but this is what they're saying. That's
so
why we want you your view. Go ahead.
There's so much lying in these commercials.
Okay,
what Poizner backed, Poizner, you recall, was a volunteer high school teacher in San Jose after he sold his company and before he became a White House fellow under George W. Bush. But he backed a proposition. It was Proposition 39 back in the year 2000, which made a small change in Proposition 13. This proposition actually passed, 39 did, and it's instead of a two-thirds majority required to pass a school construction bond in a local school district, you now only need 55% majority. That's the change, and that's what Meg Whitman is talking about when she says and makes the claim that Poizner opposed Proposition 13. It's just the end of the supermajority for school construction bonds and nothing else. And without that having passed, there would be an awful lot more dilapidated school buildings in this state. There would be an awful lot of places that are not painted. There would be an awful lot of school desks not existing. And there would be an awful lot of overcrowded classrooms. So I can tell you that for the welfare of the school children of California, that change in the law was pretty darn essential, because a lot of school bonds have passed that probably wouldn't have passed without it. And that's what she's talking about when she says higher taxes. It's the same thing when they say Jerry Brown, as mayor of Oakland, created a lot of taxation for the citizens of Oakland. What they're really saying is that while Brown was mayor, the citizens of Oakland, by a two-thirds vote, passed parcel taxes twice. Now, the citizens passed that. Brown didn't pass it by some fiat, some dictatorial thing. The citizens voted by a two-to-one margin or more to set up a parcel tax to fund the schools in Oakland. And that's what they're really complaining about. And Jerry Brown has said to me, personally, when I brought this up to him, he said, what are they trying to say? That the citizens of Oakland don't have a right to tax themselves if they choose to do so?
Well,
and of course they have that right.
Sure. Well, you know, certainly the so much of what you're absolutely right. So much of what is said, we don't know how much of it is true and how much of it is falsehood. So, but the interesting thing to me is the right wing Republican establishment is certainly, and Tom McClintock, are backing Poizner over Meg Whitman. So the conservative Republicans, and we're getting calls from Mike Spence, I'm sure you know who he is, and so many of the other establishment Republicans, and I know them all personally, and they're all behind Poizner over Whitman. Why is that?
It's because Poizner has spent probably most of the last 4 years campaigning among them, and Whitman's a newcomer, and they don't trust her. But if you look at the positions that they take, and Meg Whitman, for instance, has published a 48-page magazine on how she would run California if she became governor. It contains a lot of assumptions that she could not enforce if she became governor, because you have a strongly Democratic legislature here. And you can't just run California the way you do a corporation. You know, in a corporation, you decide who's on the board if you're the chairman. You decide who the executives are and so on. That's not how it works in government.
I'm sure it isn't, and that's why I say, you know, I'm not sure why anybody with the current state of the economy would want to be governor.
We'll talk about that when we get
back.
All
right, we'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest, of course, is Tom Elias. And Tom has a syndicated column that's read across California, read across the country. He's really got an excellent grasp of what's going on. He knows these people. He's talked to them personally. So we need to listen to what he has to say and get his views on this, and this is why I asked him to come on here and express his views at this point. Go right ahead, Tom.
Okay, so we're back.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Each individual claims that they're against amnesty or in favor. But the thing is that none of them can do anything about amnesty. It's a federal issue. But they're talking about it at the state level because it's a hot-button issue, because people either line up for or against amnesty. Most of the Republicans would be against amnesty. But it has nothing to do with California. California can't declare amnesty. Tom makes this point so valid. Most people never think of this. All they do is watch the television commercials, and their button is pushed, and they're going to choose a candidate based upon a non-issue in California. You pick up the story from there. What's going to happen? Looks like the polls still show Whitman way ahead. Is that accurate?
Yes, they do, but there's some interesting twists and turns that make people think this is kind of an unstable lead for her. that her support may very well be a mile wide, but it also might be an inch thin. That is, first of all, that when Poizner began running his commercials heavily, first in the middle of April, he took her lead down from 50 points in several polls to under 10 points. And then she responded with a barrage of her own ads, even a bigger barrage than she was already running, and all of a sudden her lead ballooned back up to about 20 points, maybe 25 points in the Republican primary. But you reach the question of who's going to vote, because there was another survey taken of, it was taken by the Tea Party organization of their members, and it found that 72% of Tea Party members, who are the most active conservative Republicans right now, 72% of them favored Poizner. So who's going to win? Probably Whitman, and maybe not. But if Proposition 14 passes, remember this. It would be the last primary where any candidate panders exclusively to the right wing of the Republican Party, and the last primary where any candidate caters exclusively to the left wing of the Democratic Party, which also runs, they run the Democratic primaries in this state.
Well,
it's the extremists in both parties that really run the elections, the primaries. And the primaries in most of the legislative districts and congressional districts in California are tantamount to election. You win the Republican primary in a Republican district, you're going to win the election in the fall.
That's because of the gerrymandering, which is totally they're not interested in representative government. They're just all about power.
That's right. And that may change, too, because Californians 2 years ago passed a proposition called Proposition 11, which created a citizens' commission to redraw the district lines for state legislative districts, not congressional districts, in future elections. And that commission is presently being selected. It's a long process and a complicated process, but the original field of 41,000 applicants for these I believe it's 11 jobs, and they're part-time jobs. They won't pay much of anything. But there were 41,000 original applicants, and that's now been winnowed down to about 2,100.
Well, it depends on who actually whittles it down and whether this will be fair and impartial. I can't imagine anything fair and impartial
here
in California.
It's kind of like a jury,
right?
The way it gets whittled down. It's going to be that the legislative leaders of both parties will get a certain number of dings, you know, the way the lawyers can when a jury is being voir dired and chosen in a courtroom. You know, you can challenge a certain number of jurors if you're the defense lawyer or the prosecutor, and you can have them knocked off the jury. And the legislative leaders will be able to do that with this group if there's people they really don't like.
All right, well, it'll be interesting to see what's going to happen, but I want everybody to get your thoughts on what they're going to do with this massive deficit we have, what they're going to do with $500 billion of pension, of obligations, liabilities, and no money to pay for them. I mean, how we're going to deal with we've got $60 billion or more in bonds that we've got to service, we've got to make the payments on the bonds, and we've got to pay the interest on the bonds, and then we got to eventually pay the bonds back. And I mean, how do you do that when you're running a $20 billion deficit? Even if you are Meg Whitman or Steve Poizner, certainly extremely brilliant individuals. Because, certainly they're talking about what's Greece going to do. And Greece, they're suggesting, drop out of the EU and simply default and let the banks lick their wounds, and maybe you can get back to some sort of financial stability. But history tells us that you cannot get out of debt by creating more debt, and yet that's what Schwarzenegger did last year. Faced with a budget deficit, they simply borrowed more money. Isn't that logical? We'll be back in just a moment with Tom Elias to get his thoughts on what's going on and how we can possibly approach the situation. All right, Tom, you go right ahead.
Okay. Well, what's going to happen is there are going to have to be some budget cuts. There are going to have to be some greater contributions to their pensions by the state employees. There's going to have to be some serious adjustments made in order to solve the budget problems here. There's no question about that.
But because the people are getting pensions, they don't want to take any less money. The unions certainly don't want to have the employees have to put any more money in. Nobody wants to make any concessions at all.
No, but there are contractual obligations, and the only way out of a contractual obligation is usually bankruptcy. And that's what the city of Vallejo did, for instance, the first city in California to go bankrupt, Orange County. About 20 years ago, went bankrupt. That was an earlier case. But that was because they made some very poor investment decisions with the short-term investments of money they had on hand. And they lost a lot of money, and they went broke. In this case, it's the big pension funds. The biggest pension funds in the world are the California Public Employees Retirement System, called CalPERS, and the California State Teachers Retirement System, called CalSTRS. Those are the two biggest pension funds in the world, and both of them have lost billions in the stock market problems of the last few years, and that's why they're having trouble meeting their obligations and having to demand more money from the various cities, counties, and the state government. It's not just the state government, by the way, that's having to pay in. It's also the cities and the counties. Because their employees in the school districts, their employees are parts of these massive pension systems. So here's the thing. You have Meg Whitman, on one of the Republicans, probably the leading Republican right now, saying that if she's elected, she's going to cut 40,000 state employees. She doesn't say which ones. She's going to make massive cuts in the budget. She doesn't say how she's going to get the legislature to go along with that. And you have Steve Poizner saying he's going to cut the budget across the board 10%. Everything will be cut 10%. And he's going to reduce taxes 10%. And he's going to create a $10 billion rainy day fund. Somehow out of all these cuts, he's going to get $10 billion extra. He calls it his 10-10-10 plan. And
hold that thought. We'll be right back here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sydney. And Tom is talking about how Meg Whitman's got to cut 40,000 state employees. She's actually going to, cut back on all sorts of services and cut a lot of programs. And, of course, as Tom points out, how can she do that? The Democrats won't go along with that. On the other hand, Steve Poizner going to cut taxes 10%, and he's going to come up with $10 billion of rainy fund, and one of the 10 somewhere in there. What was the other 10% he was going to do?
He's going to cut the budget across the board 10%, he says. He's going to cut taxes 10% across the board, and he's going to create a $10 billion rainy day fund, he says.
That's really wonderful.
That's a 10-10-10 plan, and you can believe it or not. But as I said before, if you believe anything these candidates tell you, take a good look in the mirror. You might be looking at one of P.T. Barnum's people.
Before we go on, Tom, would you like to get your website out so people would know how to get your columns and share in your wisdom?
Well, you can read my columns at www.californiafocus.net, and you will not find any ads on that website. That's, you know, nobody's trying to sell you anything there. And you can get my book, The Brzezinski Breakthrough, through Dr. Stan, Radio Liberty.
And it's an excellent book, and we've sold, I think we've probably sold an awful lot of them. I know pretty close to 100 of them. It's an important book, and if you haven't read The Brzezinski Breakthrough, why it's available through Radio Liberty. Well, let's get back, of course. We've got the two leading Republican candidates. What about Jerry Brown?
Well, here's where you might have a Nixon in China moment. Because Jerry Brown is supported by labor unions. They've independent committees run by labor unions have already spent about $2 million on advertising for him. That's a drop in the bucket to compared to the $125 million the two Republicans have spent. But Jerry Brown will be spending about $40, $45 million of his own in the November general election campaign. He will get his message out no matter who his opponent is. And just like Nixon, who ran as a right-wing Republican, was able to create an opening to China, maybe Jerry Brown, who's running as a union-backed candidate for governor of California, can actually make some kind of overtures to the unions that they might respond to. Because you have to remember, when Jerry Brown was governor of California the last time, he was no patsy for the unions. He'll remind you, for instance, that he vetoed three pay increase bills for state employees in just 1 year. Three in just one year.
Well, I'll never forget one time in the old days when you used to get on an airplane flight, you usually talk to the people next to you and get to know a little bit about them. One of them, time I was flying, and this fellow was a state senator, a Democrat state senator, conservative, and we just were talking about what was going on in Sacramento. It was the time when Jerry Brown was the governor. I guess Reagan was the governor by this time, but Brown had been there before, immediately before Reagan won. And, you know, the comment was, Jerry Brown is the smartest person, smartest politician I've ever met. And this was from a Democrat, conservative Democrat, serving in the state Senate. Well, what's your impression about Jerry Brown?
Well, my impression about Jerry Brown is he's matured incredibly. Remember, he became governor at the age of about 34. And maybe 33, actually. And he's now 72 years old. In the intervening time, he's run for the United States Senate. He's run for president. He's been the chairman of the California Democratic Party. He's been the mayor of Oakland for 8 years. He's been attorney general of California for 4 years. And he worked about 6 years with Mother Teresa in India during the 1980s. Jerry Brown is a different man than he was when he was governor the last time. He's a lot more practical, but people still call him, they insist on calling him Governor Moonbeam.
I know.
That was a tag that was hung on him by Mike Royko, the great, great Chicago columnist, the late great, I should say, also. And Mike Royko, 7 years after he coined that term, personally apologized to Jerry Brown for it and said that he had been wrong. And he coined the term Moonbeam because Jerry Brown in 1977 proposed that California put up its own communications satellite. Now that was really a radical idea in the 1970s. Why would a state need a satellite of its own? It was, you know, one of these outer spacey kind of things. And yet if California had put up its own satellite in the 1970s, imagine how much money it would have saved, and how much money it would be making right now by renting out space on that satellite. It was actually a very forward-thinking proposal, and not crazy at all, but it garnered the term moonbeam for Jerry Brown, and it's kind of a ridiculous thing when you think about it, because this is a man who also told us that we were coming to an era of limits, that we were going to have to limit the budget. He's the man who, when the professors' unions of the University of California and the California State University system demanded pay increases, he wouldn't do it. He said, you all get psychic rewards from your work. You don't need all this money. You get other kinds of rewards. And they hated him for that, the unions did. And now they're backing him. And Jerry Brown is also the only major candidate who isn't putting forward some silly notion that will be defeated the minute it's proposed to the state legislature. You know, none of this 10% across the board tax cuts, we're going to fire 40,000 employees immediately. Those ideas won't fly, and he knows it. So what does he say how he's going to solve the budget? He says he's going to sit down with every legislator during the month before, the 2 months between the election and when he would take office. He'll sit down with every one of them, and he'll bang their heads together. And this is what he did in Oakland, by the way. He ran a very fiscally sound city government there. And he you know, he worked personally with everybody on that city council, and so it's a kind of, he's had some different experiences than he had when he became governor the last time. He's just not the same individual. I knew him then, and I know him now, and he's changed a phenomenal amount.
Well, because I remember the big thing about him was he was against spraying for the medfly. They wanted to spray the state for the medfly, and he opposed that. And
well, actually, no. He insisted on it.
Oh, he insisted on it, okay.
Doing it for the Mediterranean fruit flies that were infesting a lot of fruit in California, and people were protesting against having malathion sprayed from helicopters down into their backyards and so on. And he insisted on doing it, and one of his top assistants, a man named B.T. Collins, actually drank a full glass of malathion just to show that this stuff wasn't poisonous.
Well, I would not drink a glass of malathion.
No, I wouldn't, but B.T. Collins did, and of course it should be pointed out that about 15 years later, B.T. died of cancer.
Right.
I don't know if it had anything to do with that.
Could very well have. Okay, fine. Well, that was certainly one of the big issues. I remember him swatting, you know, supposedly on an interview, swatting a medfly.
Yeah, but don't confuse it. Get it, you know, he was insisting on preserving the agriculture of the state. He was not going to be controlled by the environmental movement that was against this.
All right, fine. Well, I'm glad. I remember that from a long time ago. That was, what, 30 years or more ago. Anyway, let's get on then to the issues of certainly what can be done as far as, I mean, with the $20 billion deficit. We've got $6 billion we still owe to the
government. Well, you have to look at programs individually, in my opinion. You don't do something across the board. You have to decide what your priorities are. For instance, we in this state have three strikes and you're out as a policy. Now, it costs California $47,000 on average to keep a prisoner in jail. $47,000 a year adds up to the biggest single spending category in California. The prison system here gets more money than the universities, more than the public schools, more than anything. And that, to me, is an atrocity.
Well, of course, isn't that a large part of that? The prison guards union, they certainly want the prisons and they want all the employees.
You are absolutely right. They do. And Meg Whitman, of course, says she's going to cut the budget, but she's also going to build more prisons. Now, I'm not quite sure how she does that, and Poizner says something similar. Jerry Brown says nothing about that, by the way. And what will probably happen if he becomes governor is that certain categories of prisoners will be released. For instance, we have, they won't necessarily be released, but they'll be released into home custody with electronic bracelets and that kind of thing. And they'll still be under supervision. And that would be that nonviolent criminals who have perhaps had three nonviolent crimes and are no physical threat to anybody. And if you monitor them and keep them at home, then they have to pay for their own upkeep. And the state no longer has to pay that $47,000 a year. Clark Kelso, who's running the prison health system for the state of California now, he's a court-appointed master who's running the state prison health system. He's proposed, he's actually singled out 32 state prison inmates who are so disabled they can't even move. And yet, and they're kept in nursing homes and hospitals away from the prisons. And their upkeep costs the state over $120,000 a year apiece. And there's a requirement that every prisoner who's outside of a prison has to have a guard on him around the clock. And so you have these tag teams of guards guarding prisoners who can't even move, who are in nursing homes and hospitals around California, and he named 32 of these guys, and releasing them would save the state $50 million by itself.
That sounds like a pretty good thing to do. I mean, so much of this is so ridiculous, and you have these rules and regulations, and you have to abide by them no matter how ridiculous they are.
That's absolutely true. But, you know, what I've been told when I inquired about these guards who are on these prisoners is that they have they're not just to protect the public from the prisoners, but to protect the prisoners from their former associates who might be angry with them for some reason.
Well, now, what about the thing of illegal immigrants in our prisons? What is the statute of them? I mean, we hear that they make a significant part of our prison population.
They are a significant part, but there's been a lot of lying in the TV and radio commercials as well. The Whitman commercials, for instance, say that 32% of our prisoners in California prisons are illegal immigrants. In actuality, the figure is about 15%. That's a very high percentage. And because it's the result of federal policy that doesn't police the border adequately, it really should be the federal government that maintains these people. Because, you know, the moment that they're released from prison, they get deported. Well, you know, then you ask the question, why not deport them first instead of keeping them in prison? Well, then they don't really get punished for their crime, and the chances are they come back across the border. That's the logic behind keeping them in prison. They come across the border again, and they're going to do exactly what they did before because they really wouldn't have been punished for anything. So we do kind of have to keep them there, but since we have to keep them there, we really ought to be able to sue the federal government for the money for their upkeep. But the federal government won't pay, and you can't sue the federal government. You don't, you know, the courts have ruled many times that individual citizens and the state governments don't have standing to sue the federal government. So you have this injustice that's foisted upon us by the federal government, and that's been true for many years. Pete Wilson was the first governor of California to demand that the federal government pay for the upkeep of the illegal immigrants. And first President George H.W. Bush refused, then President Clinton, then President George W. Bush refused, and now President Obama refuses.
Well, now, what should we do about the welfare benefits for illegal immigrants? We passed Prop 187 that Gray Davis refused.
Well, first of all, you have to understand, illegal immigrants don't get welfare.
Well, they don't.
No,
well,
they don't.
I know they get subsidized education. In other words,
they do go to the public schools.
And they not only that,
most of their children who go to the public schools are United States citizens.
But if you are an illegal immigrant and you come into California and you are here illegally and you want to go to college, you can get a state residence, certainly lower rate than you could if you were an American coming in from Nevada to go to our state colleges. So we do subsidize their higher education, don't we?
But see, that we do, but it's overrated what the amount is. The illegal immigrants in California universities amount to less than one half of 1% of the population of the colleges, of the student body. And yes, they do have to pay in-state tuition, but no, they don't get Cal Grant scholarships, the most common state scholarship. They're not eligible for that kind of thing, and they usually don't apply because then they might be exposed as illegal immigrants and deported.
But they do get the lower rates. So we are subsidizing illegal immigrants going to college, even if it's only a half percent.
We are subsidizing some. There's no doubt about it. We're subsidizing the prisoners. But it's not as many prisoners as the political candidates say when they're pandering. A lot of these things get exaggerated, is what I'm trying to say, Stan. The illegal immigrants are not the cause of our financial problems. The cause of our financial problems is our own profligacy.
All right, like, but we have
like Pogo said, you know, in the old comic strip, we have met the enemy, and he is us.
But of course, what we have is we have a very high wages for state employees, much higher than you would get working at comparable jobs in the private sector. You get as much pension benefits, you get health benefits. You can retire if you're a policeman or fireman at 50 years of age and with a good salary, and then you go get another job.
There are definitely abuses there, particularly in the early retirement of state employees. You know, there's something that's called pension boosting that goes on often in the last couple of years that a public employee works, because the pension is based on their average salary over their last two or three years as a civil servant. And so a lot of these people in their last couple of years will run up immense amount of overtime and almost double their salaries by working extra hours. And then that amount that they're paid, including the overtime, is the base amount on which their pension is figured.
And
that just shouldn't be allowed. They should change the rules.
But, of course, the unions don't want that. I mean, but this is going to bankrupt the state. I don't see any way that we can ever possibly pay off our pension obligations, our health care obligations. How can a state with a budget of something like $80 billion and $86 billion with a $20 billion deficit included in that, and then how are they ever going to come up with $500 billion to pay off these other things, the $68 billion in bonds? I mean, it looks to me like, well, you may certainly raise taxes. You certainly may raise taxes and drive people out of the state.
Well, part of it is.
We'll be right back in just a moment. What's your thoughts? Tom, I want you to tell me what should be done.
Well, part of the solution is obviously going to have to be economic recovery.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, I was horrified when I saw the plight of the people in Haiti after the earthquake. But a similar event could happen right here in the United States, and that's why you should call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD, that's 866-404-FOOD, and purchase a supply of his products. Freeze-drying is a great way to preserve food. I know because I bought a supply 40 years ago, and when I opened a can recently, the food was as fresh and tasty as when I purchased it. We're living in uncertain times, so if you'd like to have a supply of ground beef, diced beef, chicken, vegetables, or fruit on hand, call the freeze-dry guy at 866-404-FOOD, that's 866-404-FOOD, and mention you heard about him right here at Radio Liberty.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
A different agenda, and those of you who want to know what the agenda is, go to the internet and read, or just go to your search engine and type in population control agenda, and you can read my treatise. It's a little outdated, but it's certainly the best thing that's available. It's short, concise, and there really are people who want to kill off most of the people in the world, and you say, well, that couldn't be. I mean, if there were treatments for cancer, why everybody would want to protect people from dying from this horrible disease. And the truth of the matter is, if you read Tom Elias's book, The Brzezinski Breakthrough, there are people who do not want treatments for cancer. They do not want to prevent the suffering. There really are evil and wicked people out there, and we cover that entire concept in my talk on, or my treatise on, the population control agenda. Certainly you need to get my talk on planned population reduction. Planned population reduction. We have all sorts of tape sets on none dare call it genocide. In fact, we have a talk, a DVD talk on none dare call it genocide. We have certainly a tape set on genocide and certainly on Laetrile and on why do we still have cancer. So many questions. And nobody will tell you the answers to it. This is why we do what we do, to try to bring you the information that is being actively suppressed by the controlled media. If you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it, you need to read it, and I know that at least it's changed some people's lives. And you need to be able to connect the dots. You need to be able to understand what's going on, because we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis here in the United States. I fear that the war with Iran is coming before very long. I don't know when it's coming, but I feel that everything is in place for a war. We're moving city carrier groups, four of them, into the Persian Gulf. They'll be there by the end of July in preparation for, well, we'll just have to wait and see. But, Sydney, I believe that there is a master plan behind everything. I believe that they're following the master plan, and I believe it's going to involve a war with a Muslim world, and may God forgive us if that is correct. I hope and pray that I'm wrong. Well, anyway, Sydney, we hope you'll get the material, the book, The Brzezinski Breakthrough, my talk, either None Dare Call It Genocide or Planned Population Reduction. If you're only going to get one, get that. If you get any of them and you ask for a copy of my Population Control Agenda monograph, you can get it, or you can get it off the Internet. Just type in Radio Liberty or Stan Monteith, Population Control Agenda. You need, of course, to get this information, and you need to get it to your friends so they understand what we're really up against. Because, of course, if you're looking at things logically, they don't make sense. If you're looking at them from the point of view of the people on the other side being inherently evil and wanting suffering and pain, then everything begins to make sense. We have a great new DVD. It's called The Specter That Haunts America. The Specter That Haunts America. You'll certainly want to watch that. It gets into the background of vaccines. It gives you the information you need to know to talk about this intelligently, because there's such an effort to confuse the subject so you can't discuss it intelligently. A lot of people will tell you that vaccines don't work, and that is frankly not true. Vaccines do work. And, of course, they'll tell you that they are not effective, and that's not true. Vaccines are effective, but the question is, how are they effective, and what is the risk-benefit ratio? Well, Sydney, we want to remind you about the Conspiracy Conference. It's this weekend, June 5th and June 6th, at the Marriott Hotel at Great American Parkway in Santa Clara. The telephone number to call is 925-449-6844, or just call our 800 number, get the details. I said, don't forget our conference there. It'll be in the North Shore of Monterey Bay on October 17th, the all-day Radio Liberty Conference, and you can call now to make your reservations. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.